We turn now to a tragic story out of California. Yesterday, Russell Weller plowed his car through a crowded farmer's market in Santa Monica. At least 9 people are dead. More than 40 are hurt. Initial tests on Mr. Weller came up negative for traces of alcohol or drugs, which puts even more focus on the fact that Mr. Weller is 86 years old. It will be some time before we know exactly why this accident took place, but the issue of older drivers is now in the spotlight. Many families have to face the difficulty of asking an older relative to stop driving. We're going to talk about that a bit later. First, to give us an overview on the issue, we're joined by NPR science correspondent Joseph Shapiro. Thanks for being with us, Joe.
Thank you, Wayne.
First, Joe, how big a problem is this? Are older drivers more dangerous than younger ones?
Well, it depends on how you read the statistics. Let's look at crashes by age group. It turns out that drivers 65 to 74, they're the safest on the road. And even drivers over 84 turn out to be about as safe as middle-aged drivers. So what makes them safe? They use better judgment. Older drivers are the least likely to drink and drive. They're the most likely to wear seatbelts. They know their limits. In the insurance industry, people refer to something called senior driver hours. Those are daylight hours between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., and that's when you'll find drivers 75 and older. And that's the main reason they're safe. They're not on the streets very much. They tend to stay in the neighborhood. They take short trips to the doctor to go grocery shopping. Drivers 75 and older drive about half as many miles per year as those under 65. But if you look at accidents per miles driven, then the picture changes. Because per miles driven, older drivers get in more accidents than any other group beside young teenagers. So as a group, they're not one of our biggest, older drivers are not one of our biggest safety issues because they're not on the road that much. Mm-hmm. But when they do drive, they're among the most likely to be involved in traffic fatalities.
What is the problem? What are the problems that they're facing? What puts them at risk?
Well, scientists know that as we age, we lose some of those physical skills that are important for safe driving. We don't react as quickly. It's harder to take a twisting over-the-shoulder glance before we shift lanes. Our eyes recover more slowly from glare. But probably the thing that makes older drivers most dangerous is cognitive impairment. And this is one of the trickiest issues in the aging field right now. Because it turns out many people in some of the earliest stages of dementia or Alzheimer's or who have mild cognitive impairment, they can actually drive safely. And they may need to drive to get to the doctor's office or to go to the grocery store. But there does come a point where they become very dangerous drivers. And it's not always clear how to tell when they've reached that point. At least until there's some tragic accident.
NPR science correspondent Joseph Shapiro is our guest. We're talking about older drivers, and this is a problem for families because often families have to intervene. Coming up after the break, we're going to be joined by someone who helps families and communities deal with the issue. We're going to be taking your calls as well. Is this something you've had to deal with? Are you planning to? Give us a call at 1-800-989-TALK. That's 1-800-989-8255. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Tomorrow, join guest host Joe Palca on the next Science Friday for a look at the clinical science of marijuana and whether it has a proper place as a pharmaceutical. Today, we're talking about older drivers. Yesterday in Santa Monica, California, an 86-year-old driver plowed through a farmer's market and killed at least 9 people. The incident has brought national attention to the issue of older drivers. We want to hear from you. Do you have an older family member or friend you're concerned about? Do you feel older drivers are being singled out unfairly? Give us a call, 1-800-989-TALK. And joining me now in Studio 3A is NPR science correspondent Joe Shapiro. Joe, just another question or two. What's happening now in terms of mandatory testing of older drivers? Is there a move towards that?
Well, in California, after yesterday's tragedy, there's already talk of forcing drivers 75 and older to take a road test when they renew a license, the same type of test that we take when we're 16. California's legislature considered that law 4 years ago, but it failed. Older people objected strongly. Legislators in other states have tried to pass similar restrictions on older drivers, and in almost every case, they failed too. The problem is that these kind of rules, they treat all older drivers as unsafe. Now, several states have required older drivers to get an okay from a physician. Some states, like just last week in Florida, require a vision test. But I think those laws have had mixed success. The real safety problems, reaction time, flexibility, dementia, these are not things that they're set up to test at the Department of Motor Vehicles.
And there's a great deal of controversy about this idea of legislating or regulating the driving age at all.
Right.
Or older drivers.
Because anything that singles out older drivers. I think Missouri may be a model, just as in California a few years ago, legislators in Missouri tried to make older drivers take a road test, and there was a lot of criticism. But the legislators working with the older groups and other people came up with a sort of a compromise, a law that did not target just older drivers. It's a law that allows police and doctors and family members to confidentially report an impaired driver. And then that driver gets called into the motor vehicle department and is required to take a road test. Now, it turns out that most of the people who get reported are elderly, but older people weren't singled out, and I think that made the difference.
All right, joining us now for this discussion by phone from Portland, Maine, is Kathy Freund. She is the president and executive director of the Independent Transportation Network. Kathy, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Maybe you can tell us something about what your organization does first.
Well, it's a transportation alternative to the private automobile. It's a non-profit charitable organization, and it's also a membership organization. And the members include seniors who use the service, but also their adult children may join, members of the public may join, businesses in the community may join. And it provides rides that replicate the comfort and convenience of the private automobile, so rather than traditional mass transit. So, for example, it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Seniors may ride alone, or they may choose to ride with other people. They may plan their ride in advance, or they may ask for a ride on demand. And, of course, all those consumer choices are reflected in the price that they pay.
Mm-hmm.
You want tuna fish, you pay one price. You want lobster, you pay another price.
So this is to offer seniors an alternative to driving at a moment in their life when perhaps it's dangerous.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, we tend to think of this issue as an all or none issue. Either you drive and you have mobility, or you don't drive and you need an alternative. And the reality is that people's ability to drive safely doesn't just drop off a cliff. It diminishes with age, and their driving behavior changes. You know, they have difficulty driving at night. They avoid interstates. So they have difficulty merging with traffic. They can't drive on hazy, rainy days. They can't drive in the snow. They can't drive in busy intersections. They can't drive at rush hour. So, you know, any kind of a driving situation that taxes their ability to take in enough sensory data and think clearly enough, they tend to eliminate those possibilities. So their mobility, they essentially trade their mobility for their safety. But then they get to a point, usually around the age of 75, where even those trades are not enough, and they begin to experience an elevated crash risk until when they get into their 80s, they are very high crash risk.
Now, this can be a very sensitive issue for a family to deal with. What do you tell people who may come to you for help in trying to talk to an older relative or friend about this?
People do come to us all the time to talk about this issue, and, you know, I think that in the future there are going to be counselors for this, actually, because, you know, there are high school guidance counselors and there are marriage counselors and so forth, but there's nobody really to talk to for adult children who are experiencing, you know, worries and concerns about their parents, or for older drivers who really want to speak with someone. So people do come to us all the time, and here in Portland, where we have the Independent Transportation Network, what we talk to them about are some of the different programs we have that can allow them to introduce a parent gradually to an alternative that will meet their mobility needs. And they don't necessarily have to stop driving in order to use the alternative. In fact, it's really common for people to try the service, say, for a snowy day or a doctor's appointment in a different community where they're not comfortable driving. And so they'll use alternative transportation and they'll still drive, But then quite often there's some sort of a precipitating health event. You know, macular degeneration is really common, non-correctable visual impairment associated with age, but also, you know, muscular skeletal issues that affect your mobility, your ability to bend or twist or turn your head over your shoulder, and then sort of precipitous events like, you know, you've been fine, you've limited your driving, you're 85 years old, and you're very careful, you only go to the grocery store, and then you have to have chemotherapy, you know, boom, you can't drive, just like that. So people can mix alternatives with driving, and if they do that and they gain a comfort level with the alternatives, they're not going to be happy, I guarantee, when they have to stop driving. But they understand that their life can and will go on and that they have choices. And eventually what we see here is those choices really relieve them many times of driving when they are feeling anxious, and their mobility can actually increase when they use an alternative.
All right, let's take some calls now. Frank in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I was thinking of the interesting predicament that people are in. I had a neighbor who comes from a very educated family, and he was very elderly, and he had Alzheimer's. And that family had decided to let him drive to the coffee shop, which was about 10 blocks away, and come back home. And if you talked to him and asked him his name, he couldn't give it to you.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yet they felt he was very safe. He drove there, came back. It was very important to him to continue this, to meet with his friends, have coffee, and come back home. And I was thinking yesterday, after hearing this story, what an interesting predicament people are in sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's actually quite a painful predicament, I think.
You know, we actually have someone in the service who fits that description exactly, and we communicate with the adult children. And this individual, we pick him up at his home and take him to the coffee shop where he has had breakfast for 40 years. And then afterward, we either take him home or we take him to the grocery store where he has shopped for 40 years. And he, you know, he sees people. He walks up and down the aisles. And then later on, we take him home.
Let me ask Joe Shapiro. Thanks for your call, Frank. I want to ask Joe Shapiro, our science correspondent, to address maybe the science here in terms of somebody with Alzheimer's who seems to be okay, his family thinks, to drive to the local coffee shop. Any way of knowing for sure if that's a good judgment?
No, it's very hard to know, and that's why there's this great debate, particularly in the Alzheimer's community, about do you say anyone who has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's can't drive? Well, then you're going to perhaps scare off a lot of people from trying to get a diagnosis or from trying to seek help because they don't want to give up the driving. And so it's very tricky to figure out where that dividing line comes.
Joe Shapiro is a science correspondent for NPR. Our other guest is Kathy Freund. She's president and executive director of the Independent Transportation Network. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take another call now from Roman, and he is in Warsaw, Wisconsin. Hi, Roman.
Hi. I'll just tell you, I'm 72, and I am in good health. But I did have an eye operation at one point, and I do have a certain amount of difficulty. But my sister developed Alzheimer's at about 68 years old, and she was living alone, still driving, of course. And who's to decide when it's the right time for her to give up her car keys? Her daughter lived way out of the state, and that was her only other relative that could take that responsibility. And it amazes me that the state of Wisconsin doesn't even require an eye exam in less than 4 to 7 years. It just astonishes me that they do not require full driving test performance, and I know it would require more manpower, but I think it's a necessary thing. From my sister's standpoint, because we were not able to take her keys away. We didn't know, you know, we didn't live in the same community. And she even took a trip from central Wisconsin all the way to the West Coast and back and got into a couple of minor scrapes. And finally her daughter came down and from Alaska and took over. But I also followed another gentleman one day that was, in broad daylight, he was driving into oncoming traffic. Every car that would come would have to go way over on the shoulder. And, of course, they couldn't get his license number. I gave it to the – I called the minute I could to the state troopers, and they said they'd been trying to get the fellow's number for quite a while. And I could see he was obviously elderly, maybe 85, 90 years old. And, you know, people, they must have a driver's test every year when they get beyond a certain age. And unless the state can supply the manpower to do that, our highways are going to get continually more dangerous.
All right.
So that's my comment.
Thank you so much for your call, Roman. I appreciate it. I guess one issue we just briefly want to touch on why this is such a difficult subject is, Kathy, because for the elderly, mobility is so important.
Well, of course it is, but mobility is important for everybody, and it just doesn't change with age, that's all. I mean, you know, we take it for granted. Mobility is like breathing. You know, being able to move almost defines us, and in the absence of being able to move is literally the definition of punishment. That's what jail is. You can't move. You have to stay in one place. So, you know, I think older people are the same as everybody else and same as all living creatures. We need to be independent, and it's just that in our society, it's become so associated with driving an automobile that it's very difficult to separate driving from mobility. But in order to address this issue, it's absolutely essential to do that. I think I want to just take a second to agree with the last caller. I think we do need to screen older drivers, and I think that 75 is a great age to do that. But I also want to say that it's important, I think really important, to be clear that it's nothing wrong. It's not that there's anything wrong with the people. In other words, people aging normally begin to experience difficulty with driving as they grow older. And I want to be careful, I think, that we don't imply that there's anything wrong with older people, that they need to be tested. You know, we shouldn't be thinking about measuring the people against the machines. The people are fine. They're aging normally. The problem is that the transportation system, which relies so heavily upon the private automobile, does not meet the needs of normally aging people. You know, so we should screen them, but we should be really clear that people are fine. Screening, I think, is like getting a mammogram at a certain age. You know, it's just good health.
And Kathy, we just heard that caller say how important it is, he thinks, for the state to get involved in this, but in the meantime, it remains a family problem. Do the children, do the family of elderly people need to really have this discussion with them before it gets to the crisis point or before they get to a point where they can't deal with it? You know, before it's even a problem, let's say.
Absolutely. And not only do they need to do it, we need to do it. If I ask you what your plan is for mobility when you can no longer drive, what would you tell me?
I'm thinking about it already because I've had to go through it with an elderly relative.
Nobody has a plan. You have a plan?
I do, but I'm probably not.
You.
I think if you've, I'll be honest with you, I think if you've gone through this with an elderly relative, you're thinking about it. And I think a lot more and more people are.
Yep. And I think that policymakers, there's a lot of room for policymakers to act here, and I'm not speaking about action in the area of regulation or restriction or testing. You know, I think that, you know, sooner or later that is going to happen, and I may disagree with Joe on this, but I do think that that's true.
All right, thanks so much. Kathy, we're going to have to go. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
It seems like we just got this discussion going, but I appreciate your being with us.
Okay.
Kathy Freund is the president and executive director of the Independent Transportation Network. She was with us on the phone from Portland, Oregon. Joe Shapiro is an NPR science correspondent. Neil Conan will be back on Monday in Washington. I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News.